Hey Pijuju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chambi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Hey, it's almost 1800 hours! I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Chambi from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Chambi. It's a time of the evening that we look at the affairs of business and everything that affect our bread and butter. It's that time that we look at what we have for you, especially when we are speaking about this evening. What are you doing, and also where are you going to spend your Friday evenings? Friday evening of month end, and the people have anticipation of what would happen, particularly when it comes to month end. And we are also indicating to say it's very important when you are spending your Friday evening with cautious, and also understanding that there is still a life ahead of this Friday, still a life ahead of the weekend. That's why when you are entering this weekend, you must enter there with a bigger picture. But we must also use this opportunity to celebrate that we are bringing June to an end, and we are focusing on finalizing 2026. You need to give yourself a round of applause, and also to understand that life is for the living, and it's always very important to make sure that you count and appreciate every minute, every second that you get. And also do not take it for granted, because I'm always somebody who is very positive about life, and I'm always indicating to say, no matter the challenges that you have, know that there are people that still want to be like you. That's why that should give you a motivation this evening. There is a lot of things happening around the continent. There is a lot of things happening in the region, particularly the region of SADC. Indeed, to be specific, the SACU region, particularly when our head of state, that is the President of the Republic of Namibia, Meme Netumbo Nandi-Daitwa, who is attending a SACU summit in Cape Town, especially to look at the content of the conversation, and also what we expect from the chief diplomat, because in the world of diplomacy, in the world of trade diplomacy, the head of state is a chief diplomat, and he or she is giving command, particularly to those who are sent outside the country, to make sure that they speak to those international institutions, they speak to those, countries, for the beneficiation of the country. And that will form part of our today's conversation, especially when we are going to be joined by a researcher and a developmental expert, especially when it comes to Africa, trade, economics, and what need to be done, especially in terms of navigation. Because what is necessary is navigation. What is necessary is how you move tactically and strategically throughout the world of complexity, how you should move in the country and also at an international platform. So one may want to look what is happening in the continent of Africa, especially these days, what is happening when it comes to Nairobi. You know, in Kenya, somebody stood up and say, the relationship between the young generation of Kenya and the presidency is not making sure. There is always a fight. There is always a push and pull. And I think if I was William Ruto, I would appoint a very young minister of youth who can be able to interact with these people. Because it seems like Ruto is a strategic guy who has a very good intention of his country, but is he meeting the needs and the expectation of Generation Z? Because since he came to power, 2024, we have seen that there have been protests looking at tax policy, looking at economic policy. That also led to the dissolution of cabinet. You also understand that after that, there have been another protest in terms of increment, in terms of the price of oil. It was held. There was another protest again, which is looking at building of US-backed Ebola quarantine facility, which was again stopped. Then just yesterday, there was around 200 or over 200 people that were arrested in Kenya, especially regarding the aspect of the commemoration of the previous protest in 2024 that was backed by Generation Z. The question that we need to ask ourselves as Africans is that is the political leadership of Africa in line with where the citizens want to go? And if it's in line, what cause the conflict between the youth, the middle, adults, and also the first generation? What is causing that conflict, and what can we do to make sure that we harmonize that conflict? Because if it continues like that, it will be looking like an unhealed wound that will continue to pain until it is treated. That's why a generational cohesion to avoid the generational conflict is quite necessary. Because if somebody stand up at the age of 100 and say, I understand your problem, David, a lot of things have changed between now and then. That's why we need that aspect of generational conflict, particularly that aspect of try to solve that generational conflict and look at generational cohesion to say, how do we exist regardless of our ages, regardless of what we think, regardless of our time, so that we can move forward. Now, interestingly, yes, which is not a good news, I'm always saying that we must watch carefully, especially when we are dealing with our oil and gas. And it's not that I don't want the international investors. I want us to lead and read and understand the previous case studies when it comes to international investors, business operators, especially in the oil and gas. Now, they stated that the court orders Total Energies to account for environmental impact of oil and gas products. A Paris court has ordered French oil giant Total Energies to report the environmental consequences of emission from its oil and gas products and explain how it plans to address them. In this aspect, the ruling seem to, is from civil case brought by NGOs and French cities demanding the company align its business with global warming target under 2015 Paris Agreement. Now here is where the conflict is. You have very tight criminal, very tight climate action policies, parallel with industrialization agenda. Here is where the interesting part comes in. You want to develop the continent of Africa, for example. Then you want to industrialize. When others were at the stage of industrialization, they use all forms of energy. But now the world is becoming so hotter and hotter. Ice are melting. Scientists are proving those things. Some believe it's a political agenda. But you also have a barrier here, which is the Western world is pushing so hard to make sure that we go green, pushing so hard to make sure that we justify how we make our products. Even like a small SME that want to get into European market, you must justify that, where did you make your product? How did you transport these products? Are these products having a traceability? And if they have a traceability, were they produced in a process you emit the green, house gases? That's why Total Energy is cornered in France, especially to give that indication and to demonstrate how they brought about their products and how they are impacting, the environment. It's interesting, really. It also called, those documents, it's also called the carbon bomb, where critics indicating that the project, including drilling more than 400 wells in Tirenga and also around 30 in Kingfisher. So looking at this aspect, it also indicated that that order also linked to the COSAL East Africa crude oil pipeline to Tanzania port of Tanga, which is almost 1,500 kilometers away. So looking at what is happening around the world, there is an ongoing aspect of climate accountability. And climate accountability is looking at, is your production defying the environment? Is your production counterproductive in terms of making sure that environment is safe? Now, contradictory, paradoxically, you start to see that climate change is real, and also understand that it can be very dangerous to the environment and to human beings. But there is a, there are contradictory policies. Apart from what is being debated about, look at, for example, how much money is spent in war. How much money is spent in manufacturing of jet fighters? What is the cost of pollution? What percentage of heat, for example, the Middle East war have cost? What percentage of heat the war in Ukraine have contributed to the global heat? And who is supporting that? That's a contradictory part of it. To say, yes, we understand that European Union, for example, which is which has some very good policies about climate, they are the same people that are fueling this jet fighting in Ukraine, drones and all these things. But the question is that where are we drawing the lines, and also where are we going to find ways on living together in harmony? Now, in line with the conversation of climate, there is another report that is looking at United Nations, and it's very paining me, especially as a student of international relations, to look at the United Nations to continue to be a condemner of everything that is wrong being done, but lack of actions. To say, if our parents are not acting, are not implementing, they are not implementer, how do you expect us great children or kids to be the implementers? United Nations here has released a report which accused Israel Authority of targeting Israel Authority and also security forces for deliberately targeting Palestinian children in Gaza, and concluding that these actions amount to genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes. The findings that contain in nearly 100-page report by the UN Human Rights Council, indicating that more than 20,000 Palestinian children were killed between 2023 and 2025, accounting for around 30% of all the reported deaths. This is bad. But the question as an ordinary Namibian is to ask myself also a question, to say, when our leaders are representing us at the UN General Assembly, what are some of the critical solutions they come up with? How much money is spent in the prevention of this war? And what can be done in terms of the future of the world? And maybe also to look at, to say, is it the end of the UN? Can we now just move to BRICS? Or can we stay with our regional economic bodies such as SADC? Or can we just find peace where we are? Because it's a very interesting report to read, especially researchers, academicians, and also those who are looking at extending the understanding of what is happening around the world. Because if you kill 30% of the children, and that is a genocide on its own, you'll be able to see that there is much that need to be done, especially looking at that. Yeah, we are moving forward with business and economic segment with me, David Shombe. And before we go to the conversation for today, just to give you an update again, to look at what happened today. The city of Windhoek have launched its disaster risk Management and Reduction Strategic Plan 2026 to 2030. That is disaster risk reduction strategy and also action plan that is looking at how safe, what are the resources, what are the capacities, and what are some of the key strategic objectives that need to be placed there in order to make sure that disaster and risk are taken care of, especially when it comes to Sido Windhoek. So last year, it's not my first time coming closer to the term disaster risk management and reduction, but I also started understanding it deeply, especially getting into the conversation with Mr. Paulus Golombe. That was last year, in looking at what are some of the key things that are involved when it comes to disaster risk management. I realized to say it's very closer to what I'm interested in, because if you look at, for example, institutional strategies, if you look at, for example, scenario planning, you will be able to understand that things will always go wrong in life. And I think it's for everybody to understand that when a city or window case, for example, disaster risk reduction strategy for 5 years, and also an action plan, the question is that what are those things that are involved? I started understanding that it's no more, it's not only about the drought and flood. It's not only about diseases. It's not only about war, earthquake, or all these things. But it's almost like everything. Everything, there is always a risk involved. Everything, there is always a risk involved. It can be accident. It can be a fire. It can be a disease. It can be a plane. You know, there is always these small private jets falling from the sky. There is a lot of things that are involved in a disaster risk management. So in getting engaging in that conversation, somebody may ask a question, for example, to say, let me say somebody just landed in at Hosea Kutako International Airport and was identified with a positive test of Ebola. The question is that how are you going to respond? What also I start learning, looking at these strategies and also looking at how these professionals are reacting, I start realizing that the best way to beat any challenge is coordination. Because one indicator that the state is a living animal, or a state is a living creature, but you also understand that organs of the state coordinating with each other will be able to achieve a lot of things. So in that discussion, the Deputy Minister of Urban and Rural Development stood up and gave a very important discussion to say, it's one thing to speak about a strategy, it's the other thing too to speak about implementation. What is so interesting is that nobody wants to enter into a country or into a city, into a town that does not have disaster risk management strategy. Apart from not having disaster risk management strategy, it's also about the reputation. There was a time not long ago where there was a veld fire in Etosha that took about 6 days, almost a week. People are disorganized, no coordination, until the NDF deployed two helicopters to assist. The question is that what lesson have we learned from that? Because we have lost a lot of wild animals. There have been debate, you know, the state is saying, no, we did not lose this number of elephants or these numbers of animals. By the end of the day, there have been photos published, and they say, no, it's not correct, it's AI. But you start understanding that it's not about the confirmed numbers, whether the fire impacted this amount of area. It's about what is your plan when you get into trouble. And what you also do not know is that disaster risk, for example, should be not only something that should be studied, but something that should be expanded more. You can look at it at the economic level. I see that if you are a developing economy, your vulnerability must always teach you to say, how do you play for a very long term? outcome. When you find yourself so vulnerable, maybe you should extend these methods at with the economy. To say, if you find yourself in a vulnerable economy, what is the relationship between the economic vulnerability and also disasters that can happen? Drought, flood, flood. And do we only react during that situation, or we have to make sure that we put measures in place? You can also put it this way. There are various areas in Namibia. You can come back to City of Windhoek to see. There are various areas that every time you see that there is flood, somebody has to be flooded out. Somebody has to die. Children have to get lost in that aspect. The question is that, what lesson have we learned? Have we invested more into disaster risk reduction? Have we invested more in the backup plan? Have we invested more into these professionals? And is this professional also understood? And I say, in part of the economic discussion, risk, security, and also things that you don't only see in the market are quite necessary. You can link a health professional to the economy. You can look at what happened when the Ebola comes. I'm not saying it's coming, but it's a possibility that it's coming. The question is that, in a case of emergency, how are we going to respond to the situation? But yeah, let's continue with the conversation. As I indicated today, we'll be joined by Mr. Ben Owanga, who is a developmental consultant, researcher, and the writer of African Development. He has keen interest in trade and economic relations. Yeah, we are moving forward with business and economic segment with me, David Shombe. And today, as I indicated, we'll be joined by a developmental consultant. Just before we engage the developmental consultant, it's quite interesting to look at where we are going as a country. And I was looking at the happy Prime Minister, Dr. Chitunga Iriangurare, especially when he arrived at Giriku Traditional Royal House in Kavango East to visit the Tompa, that is Bartholomeus Rivita Kayoka Ndiona, especially looking at ahead of his coronation, which is scheduled to be on the 27th, that is tomorrow. But it's quite important. One must also appreciate the leadership of Eben and Rural Development to say it's not easy to deal with or to work at that space of traditional leadership, because there is always customary laws. And that may not be the same. There is always customary laws that at some point contradicting even the existing constitutional laws. But looking at how things are, it's a bit peaceful in Namibia. I don't venture much into traditional affairs, but it's a bit peaceful. Unlike those years I see when Tatu Tony was there, it was not easy. There are fights after fights. Fights of who's going to take over, fights of who is a legitimate leader. But one, you also be able to see that a lot of issues are being finalized. But I think some responsibility does not require a diplomat. Some responsibility does not require somebody who negotiates. Sometime you need not only to bulldoze, but you also need that muscle to make sure that approaches should be, done in a manner that not only forceful, but also with authority. In the area of international relations and trade, from Minister of International Relations, we'll be able to see that Basanda Jerobiam Shanika, Basanda Jerobiam Shanika, was appointed as an ED of Minister of International Relations and Trade. Was appointed as an ED, and you see a lot of congratulations, and also you see a lot of congratulations coming through. You know, when you look at Basanda Shanika, he's a career diplomat, and this somebody who has been a diplomat for over 20 years, and with a PhD in international relations and master's in international relations. I think it's the right person to lead the ministry, particularly at a time where we don't only need global relations, but we also need economic affairs. We need to make sure that that is being done. But looking at the affairs of international affairs, I think that is it's a good appointment, especially looking at that ministry, because when you become an ED, that is the highest success in terms of public sector. There is no other position in terms of public sector apart from becoming an ED. That is a great one. For those of you who are aspiring to get somewhere, if you are in a public sector, grade one is the first, and the last position. On top of that, you only have maybe political appointment, but a successful career person in public sector, an ED is number one, or a deputy ED is one of the last position. If you look at the scale of public sector, but you also start understanding that for you to reach the at-risk content matters in your promotion, in your work, and also in what you are bringing to the people of Namibia. Because if you oversee, if somebody say you are an ED, you oversee the ministry functions in terms of you are an accounting officer. Everything that is happening in the ministry, you understand. You are a technocrat of that nature. But that happening at an international relation and trade, I think it's a good thing. But you also have to see what are some of the major changes and the development that will be brought about, not only in terms of strategic planning, but in terms of the ministry too, to deal with small businesses and business operators. Because what we see is discussion at the highest level. And what killed us for a long time, what has been killing us, is a discussion at the strategic level. And a little discussion is coming to say, how can we involve SMEs into this endeavor? How can we involve SMEs into this platform? But I think that is what is expected, looking at the new developments which are happening in the ministry. Yeah, we are moving forward with business and economic segment. Today we'll be speaking about economic integration. So I indicated that today our president has traveled to Cape Town, especially to meet with other leaders, the head of states, at SACU Summit. But people may want to know, a lot of things have been discussed about SACU, all this custom union, the role SACU is playing. But we want to understand and also bring to life the significance of that institution. In the studio, I'm joined by a developmental consultant, a researcher and author, particularly on issues of leadership, and his vast interest on trade and African development. That is Mr. Ben Wanga, who helped us unpack the role of SACU. Mr. Ben, good evening and welcome to Business and Economic Segment.
Evening, Tata David. So, evening, listeners.
We are happy to have you on the line and also to unpack the aspect of SACU. Maybe if somebody have to ask you to say, Namibia is part of a lot of regional body. We speak about SADC, we speak about COMESA, we speak about African Union, Continental Free Trade Area. We sign a lot of charter. But in terms of a custom union such as SACU, is SACU still relevant in the 21st century, particularly looking at 2026? And what is the necessity of that? Maybe just to highlight, particularly to somebody who is just looking out there to say, you know, people are just traveling. You know, the last time it was a meeting of senior and technical expert from the ministry, but now you have head of state. Is this just luxury, or what is the necessity of such a custom union?
SACU is important because it is a customs union. Yeah. A customs union is based on much greater integration.
Yeah.
A custom union is different from an economic community in the sense that a customs union focuses on trade facilitation,
yeah,
economic integration,
yeah,
and the sharing of external tariffs, mm-hmm, when it comes to trade.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these external tariffs,
mm-hmm,
but within our trade arrangements, because SACU is made out of Botswana, Namibia, Lesotho, Swaziland, and South Africa, we do not charge tariffs, external tariffs, when we are trading.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a much more this is a much higher level of integration that you can find,
mm-hmm,
in the framework of economic communities. SACU is relevant particularly for Namibia because we derive a lot of trade receipts,
mm-hmm,
from the community. I'm not so sure about the figures, but much of our income is a government.
Mm.
Comes from the SACU pool.
Yeah, indeed, I've seen the last time I checked, especially 2025-2026, it was looking at around 21 billion there, adding to our budget. Now, somebody may want to know, to say you are in a custom union, they are not charging tariffs, particularly trading among those countries, and you say this much integration. To look at the history of SACU, for example, in that regard, since 1910, there has been a lot of changes. Are these countries benefiting equally? And what are some of the new development, according to you, which is in place to assist these countries to benefit much better, and also to, you know, fasten that trade relations, especially looking at the history of Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, Swaziland, Eswatini, and Lesotho. To say what are some of, what can be done to make sure that this country benefits such much better, and also what are some of the new development that has been around?
Yeah, you see, SACU wants to promote regional integration.
Yeah.
SACU wants to promote investment promotion.
Yeah.
SACU wants to promote trade facilitation.
Yeah.
Currently, SACU wants to modernize its customs.
Yeah.
Excise system.
Okay.
At the same time, SACU wants to see on how they can capitalize on the Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement.
Yeah.
Namibia has been benefiting because, as I said,
yeah,
our economy and our market is very small. We have a small market. South Africa has a big market.
Yeah.
Lesotho, Eswatini, Botswana, they do not have big markets.
Yeah.
Therefore, in view of the revenue sharing formula,
yeah,
used by SACU,
mm,
we are getting more than what we would have gotten,
yeah,
had we not been part of the customs union.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, as we happen to be members of the custom unions, SACU has benefited us. Yeah, you mentioned the figure, the amount that we are getting, around 20.
Do
you need toiletries and household cleaners, you won't get it cheaper than a you save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You save. Where else?
The amount that we are getting around 20, did you say 20 billion?
Yeah, over 20 billion, yes.
Yeah, around 20 billion. So it's a lot of income. Now, Namibia has a small market.
Yeah. No.
Investors are attracted to bigger markets. Yes.
So that is very interesting to see. But one might also want to know to say, is that not creating a long-term dependency? Because even though we are trading with SACU, the last time I checked, Namibia main trading partners are South Africa and China. But when you look on the other side, South Africa main trading partners are not even in SADC, which means that we need South Africa more than South Africa need us. Is that not creating a dependency? And what can we do to make sure that moving forward, that trade relation, that being part of the union does not create that dependency syndrome? Then we end up not really just just not for importing, but also to develop on our own. Because looking at our national priorities, you see that the president of Namibia is looking at value addition, this aspect of making sure that in terms of trade we are moving forward and we are standing on our own. Is that not creating a long-term dependency?
It's not a dependency, because even if you are a member of SACU, you can trade with China, you can trade with the USA, you can trade with the European Union.
Yeah.
You can trade with the countries in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only difference is that we have a common external tariff.
Yeah.
Meaning that for everything which is imported into SACU,
yeah,
it goes to one pool. And so we share the tariff. The tariff based on an external tariff. So it's not a dependency, because Namibia is not limited in terms of trading with Botswana, in terms of trading with Congo, in terms of trading with any other country.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, when we are there, because that has been my concern, let us look at there is nothing without difficulties, or there's nothing without advantages and disadvantages. What do you think is something that maybe is a challenge to work on, especially with SACU, to make sure that we maximize our benefit, especially looking at current dynamics? You know, South Africa is our big brother, but South Africa is also not in good terms with the world. I don't want to speak about xenophobia, but looking at their relationship with USA, for example, and also how things are moving, shifting to BRICS and all these things. In terms of protecting our interests and maximizing the benefits, what do you think are the foreseeable challenges within SACU that we can look at and we can also deal with before they come to us?
Okay, normally when you look at trade, you don't want to kill small players within an economy.
Yeah.
For example, you have the poultry sector, and this sector in the past was underdeveloped.
Yeah.
There was a time when under the infant industry protection.
Yeah.
That there was a moratorium of exporting chicken, of importing chicken into Namibia.
Yeah.
At the same time, under the agricultural sector, government has prioritized agriculture
Yeah.
And it has decided that so much should be imported into Namibia.
Yeah.
When it comes to agricultural produce. So you are trying, the challenges are small players. Infant industry protection. Employment creation.
Yeah.
SME development.
Mm-hmm.
Because in as much as you are trading under SACU,
yeah,
you also want your industry to grow.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
So you are protecting your industries against dumping. Dumping mechanisms whereby cheap goods are being dumped in your market.
Yeah.
Resulting into the stifling of existing industries. So government is balancing out.
Yeah.
It has prioritized agriculture. But you also need SACU.
Yeah.
Because you also want to take advantage of the trade receipts. Under the common revenues formula of the external tariffs, which are charged by SACU.
Okay.
So the challenges are there.
Yeah.
So you will have what we call import quotas. Import quotas, meaning that you allow countries to import a certain amount of goods. You want to build your sector. You don't want to be over dependent, because it's not only Namibia, but Botswana and many other countries. They are protecting their agriculture.
I hear you.
Yes. They are protecting their agricultural sector because agriculture generate a vast amount of jobs.
I hear you. Now that Ben, it's a very good thing that you spoke about the agriculture sector. Just before I let you go, somebody may want to know, to say, is a trade game a game that a developing country can win? I'm asking this question because we are signing a lot of agreements. We are into complicated multilateral agreements here and there. We want, at one point, we want to work with SACU. The other aspect, we are looking at SADC. The other aspect, we are looking at removing all the trade barriers and looking at Africa Continental Free Trade Area. The other side, we have EU on this side, and we want to leverage on Asia and also the BRICS. Now, in your own understanding, how positioned is Namibia as we are speaking in 2026? And what do you think we can do differently in order to win this game of trade? Because I know you have done much research, particularly in Africa, and also trade with other countries.
Okay. The most important aspect is for you to diversify your market.
Yeah.
We have access to the American market through AGOA.
Yeah.
We have access to the Chinese market in terms of our beef export.
Yeah.
We have access to Norway. We have access to Japan in terms of our fish and fish products.
Yeah.
So you have to diversify your market. You have to sign trade agreements. In order for you to have as many markets as possible. And before you do that, you must have capacity. Meaning that the goods that you are producing should appeal in terms of standards. In terms of export standards. There is this debate about the red line.
Yeah.
The red line is protecting Namibia's beef export interest.
Okay, okay.
Because we are waiting for the scientists to come up with a vaccination, which will curtail the spread of foot and mouth disease. Yeah, so it's a what in export they call it phytosanitary measure. Phyto meaning it's a hygiene. It's health. Phytosanitary. So these are phytosanitary measures which are embraced all over the world as standards. If you are selling food, if you are, even for those who are in construction, you must adhere to industry standards. If you are selling food, you must adhere to World Health Organization standard. Yeah, so what I'm saying is that we need to diversify our markets. We have entered into many markets. Namibia is part of AFTA. We are selling salt. We are selling cattle hides. Yeah, we are selling fish.
So
now Onjove is being sold. It's not Onjove, but Marula well is being sold. Because of adhering to these international standards.
Now, lastly, what is your advice to SME in Namibia, especially looking at where we want to get into as Africa? I know, when you look at our government, they do much. I see the Ministry of Trade and International Relations, and they do much on giving information. But there is always this debate to say, even though we speak much about Africa continental free trade area, our local businesses are still not ready, are not capacitated, and will lose out on the first round of Africa continental free trade area. In view of that, what do you think we can do moving forward, especially capacitating the Namibian domestic businesses?
Yeah, you are correct. Entrepreneurship is important.
Yeah.
We have it as a subject in Namibian schools.
Yeah.
A JUNAM is also a compulsory module.
Yeah, in commerce sector, yeah, they have even a degree, I think.
I was talking to a student who was doing science and who told me that she also did entrepreneurship. She did a module on how to write a business plan and so on. Just an introduction.
Indeed, indeed.
So now, your question is SMEs. SMEs employ a lot of people because government cannot absorb all people in employment. Now, SMEs need assistance in terms of business management skills. How to do marketing. How to do sales. How to do bookkeeping or finance. And how to do brand management. And on how to do networking. These are aspects which developmental partners together with government and the private sector can collaborate on.
Indeed. Yes.
In order to give capacity to SMEs. SMEs are the backbone because you also need to give them access to markets, access to shelf space. You have to train them in terms of capacity, in terms of manufacturing. You have to upskill them, and you need to strengthen their capacity.
efiloshi sho olo taliku tungupo. Oma wa o tomono okujako NHP. Genge wa longifa elongifo lilipedu lo wawo uhaku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku nefiku. Mefiloshi sho lo uhaku oe. Po wawoshi mali wawo shosha kupako. Washika wedgelu wako mto alando lako. Kashi, koma punglo e nashano unjolo welewe. Otodulu okulongifa oma uwawe. Wa hupuko, opo unamiti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufutila po oimali waishona. Oyo hodulu okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene. Oma yakulo olu hapu. Hakala ina kwa telwa. Mo uwawe kwa folo elu unamiti. Ile, otodulu nokuli. Okupitifa po e mwedidonumba. Tokala inofuta e akulolo elu unamiti. Kwa uyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fwana ododi na okulandolwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
To strengthen their capacities, I have been talking about standards because standards will take you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Africa Free Continental Trade Agreement has opportunities.
Yeah.
We are importing a lot, almost everything.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs can seize the opportunity of acquiring technology.
In
assembly lines, you can get them as an assembly line to manufacture water, to manufacture soap. These are all opportunities in the Africa Free Continental Trade Agreement. You can enter the Botswana market, you can enter the South African market, you can enter the Ethiopian market, Nigerian market by selling shoes, by selling clothing, by selling furniture, by selling spare parts, if you acquire the technology. I think what is needed is for us to be proactive and not just wait on government.